Today, from Washington, Broadcasts Incorporated presents Upton Close, reporter, author, commentator, and observer of world affairs. Reporting today from the nation's capital with a distinguished guest, Congressman Harold Velde of Illinois, former FBI man, now a member of the House Un-American Activities Committee. Now, the statesman of the air, Upton Close.
Hello, Americans. Last week we had Easter. This week, April Fool's Day. It should be the other way around. Easter is for awakening. Let's not become fools again. We have had the testimony of Larry Parks before the House Un-American Activities Committee here that he was a fool to join the Communist Party. He thought that Stalin was a hero doing fine things for freedom and tolerance. He thought that Myron Fagan and Rupert Hughes and others of us who were warning about the Communist plot to use Hollywood money and movies were reactionaries and bigots, because communist propagandists, who later went to jail for contempt of Congress, told him so. Larry Parks was a fool because he thought Marxism was a good thing. He confesses it. But he was not as big a fool as the policymakers of his government, who thought, or said they did, that Joe Stalin was a good fellow. And the pro-Russian and pro-Marxist officials of our government were not as big fools as the voters who put them there and kept them there term after term and still keep them there. Larry Parks was a fool because he thought to be liberal meant to be socialist, to favor a Big Papa government. Larry Parks and his Hollywood good fellows had not paid enough attention to the basic principles of government to know that Big Papa government is the exact opposite of liberalism. Liberalism is the system which gives the opportunity for people to earn their own way and make their own successes or failures. To earn what they get and get what they earn and keep what they get, so long as it is not taking from others their opportunity to get and keep. Liberalism is the system whereby people have as little government, as few laws and officials over them as possible, taking as little of their savings and earnings as possible in taxes. That's the system Larry Parks, earning big money there in Hollywood, liked for himself. But Larry Parks did not stop to think that out, so he contributed money to a political gang out to run the lives of everyone and take the earnings of everyone in taxes and the savings of everyone through changing the value of gold and our dollar to suit themselves. Larry Parks joined that group. Last week, he came to Washington to tell the Un-American Activities Committee, which his group so long denounced and reviled, that he'd been a fool. After all, Larry Parks was not so much of a fool as our president, who sent Harry Hopkins to Moscow to give dictator Stalin twice as much American stuff as he needed to whip Hitler, and built Soviet Russia up into the second largest power in the world, ready to challenge us who saved her. Larry Parks was not so much a fool as two presidents who let Alger Hiss and Lattimore and their pals plan the future for this nation and the world, throwing all of Asia and Eastern Europe into a socialist dictator's hands. Larry Parks was not so much of a fool as a State Department, which gave everything to imperialist Stalin and then sent a diplomat to try to collect $11 billion owing for lend-lease when the Russians would not even agree to a settlement of a quarter million. To tell you the truth, friends, Larry Parks was not so much a fool as the many, many well-meaning fools in government and big business and little business and churches and schools and women's clubs today who think, now that Russian-style socialism called communism is very, very bad, British-style socialism called the welfare state is still the fashionable wave of the future they should be riding in this country. Larry Parks was not so much of a fool as the American liberals who now condemn the ravenous bear of Marxism called Russia, but suffer and coddle the cute little bear cat called socialism or social welfareism, which has already grown big enough to eat everything in Britain and is fattening itself through emergency controls here. Well, one more thought about Larry Parks and April Fool. Larry Parks expressed fear that public would repudiate him for having been a communist. The commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars, Charles Rawls, at first said he hoped not. On second thought, he lost his temper and exploded. Parks was carrying a red card, he said, while we were overseas, and he made $1 million doing it. The VFW is certainly going to hold it against him. I know how Commander Rawls feels. At the same time, he should remember that his commander-in-chief and the command's policymakers, Harry Hopkins, Alger Hiss, Joseph P. Davies, and Averill Harriman, were doing far more for Joe Stalin than communist clubs in Hollywood could do at that time. And they were using American GIs and American production to do it. Don't think I'm excusing Hollywood Reds. It's from Hollywood Reds that all my troubles started, when Rupert Hughes and Cecil DeMille and producer Victor Fleming and writer Myron Fagan and Upton Close on the networks and others based in Hollywood started to expose the Reds. We paid for it with our contracts. We were smeared by an organized racial pressure group. Writer Myron Fagan tells all about it in a booklet you can get from him in Hollywood. No, I'm not excusing Larry Parks and his pals, but after all, they were little propagandists for a cause that worked from the top down. Let's hope that patriotic groups like the Veterans of Foreign Wars understand the reach of treachery in America and condemn it in high places as well as low. FBI Chief Edgar J. Hoover has issued warning of the danger of communist sabotage in this country while Communist Party members are still having a field day, ignoring the McCarran Act, which requires them and their fellow traveling organizations to register. Communists are doing as they please, while Truman's Subversive Activities Control Board chief, Seth Richardson, and the Supreme Court battle out legalities. Another communist attempt to frustrate the Ober Act in Maryland, which prevents persons who will not take the oath of loyalty from running for office, is not doing so well. The Maryland court will not act in time to enable the contesting lady to run for office. And Michael Obermeyer, head of the New York Hotel Employees Union, convicted of perjury for saying he was not a communist, who thought he could get off through the higher courts, has to go to jail. That's some encouragement to patriots. You who have been watching television lately know how scared the crime investigation witnesses are of getting caught on a perjury charge. They look and act like scared mice instead of big, tough, ex-bootlegger gangsters. They try to be awfully polite, as their lawyers instruct them. But patriots want laws which catch traitors for treachery, not just for lying about it. More states should pass laws like that Texas law the Texas legislator Marshall Bell told us about a few weeks ago on this program. I'm sure that common people who are not diplomats got a lot of joy out of the upset of the World State Department when General MacArthur took the bull by the horns and told the Chinese command just what they could do to put an end to fighting and what they'd get if they did not do it. I'm sure that fighting and paying American citizens generally were as greatly out of patience as MacArthur at his inability to get any instructions at all from the double-dealing British socialist government and the toadying Acheson State Department and the vacationing Truman. Dean Acheson bit out half his mustache, but his boys now report that, quote, friction between Washington and General MacArthur is being cleared up by important behind-the-scenes negotiations. Ha, ha, ha. In Congress, investigations are likely to continue. The public has got an appetite for them, even if Democratic chairmen would like a release. Above all, the investigation of RFC should continue and spread into Army procurement expenditures and the other government corporations. Why not ask Senator Williams of Delaware to get into the Commodity Credit Corporation records again? Remember, a year ago, Senator Williams' subcommittee found that the Commodity Credit Corporation did not even have vouchers for millions of dollars it had spent. As a matter of fact, it apparently did not even have a bookkeeping system. This is the branch that buys potatoes, eggs, and all that sort of thing and destroys them. The comment of old Jesse Jones, who administered the RFC during war years, is the quote of the week. Quote, if we cannot have integrity in our government, said Jones, why sacrifice our boys in Korea and our billions in defense of our country? The RFC now stands accused not only of lending money to gambling houses and swank hotels, but of starving essential war processes. William O'Neill of General Rubber and Tire Company says it got turned down on a process that would hike our synthetic rubber immediately. Maybe the socialist British influence that sells rubber to Red China reaches into RFC policy. Could that be? Has Pierron got atomic energy or hasn't he? That's the quiz question of the week. I've talked to top atomic scientists. They doubt everything until proved, of course, but they won't say no because everything is possible in science. A number of fine German and Austrian nuclear sciences are known to have settled in Argentina. If they've discovered a simpler system not requiring the immense plant we have at Oak Ridge and Hanford, which, of course, Pierron does not have, it would be, say my scientist advisors, doubtless through the junction of elements instead of fission of elements. And without the unearthly heat of sun or stars, only one way of joining elements into heavier ones is known. Scientists call it resonance. I wouldn't say it's known, it's a theory. The theory is that if by accident certain atoms are subjected to frequency of a vibration which would speed itself up, sort of like a bridge beginning to rock from a dog trotting over it, the atoms might shake till they break down. Well, we'll know in time if Pyrone is bluffing, but surely he does have this conference of diplomats from American countries meeting here now, guessing and gossiping like a ladies' aid society. The worst news of the week is that the dollar keeps dropping. Now it's going to take more dollars than ever to ship everything on the railroads, which will make everything we use go up because everything gets shipped. And unions want another raise. Everybody can strike, it seems, but the taxpayer. The best news of the week is that the great Cadillac tank plant at Cleveland has begun production several months before anyone dreamed it could. That and General Marshall's report on the increase of armed forces inspired defense mobilizer Charles Wilson to say that enough might to deter Russia from attack upon us is now in sight. So, in spite of increasing disorder in the Middle East and the prospect of having to share oil with Russia there, Americans are now in prospect of a peace scare, I dare say. That brings me to the question to be settled in Congress this coming week. Our guest, one of the youngest men in the House, Representative Harold H. Belday of Midstate Illinois, a war veteran and an old FBI man, on the subject of sending troops to Europe. Mr. Belday, please.
First of all, Mr. Close, I would like to state that my mail has been filled with objections to sending troops to Europe under present conditions, especially without the consent of Congress. I believe it is plain to everyone who wants to see the situation as it is that the American public has no confidence or trust in the President. This is regrettable, but still a fact. They do have confidence in their elected representatives and senators, however, and for that I am thankful. I believe if the American people can depend upon the fact that their elected Congress has the privilege of looking into such matters, that they will go along with our decisions. I do not believe it necessary to give carte blanche to the President to send troops wherever he feels. I also believe that if it becomes necessary to establish a standing army in Europe, it should be done only if the European countries who will derive the benefit of our backing also join us wholeheartedly in protecting their own countries. Why should it be necessary for America to forever be a wet nurse to Europe? Europe surely can understand that. While we want peace and are willing to fight for it, we expect them to share their part of the burden and be fair enough to furnish manpower. If a man cannot or is not willing to defend his own castle, why then should another man take up the burden? I also believe that we should come to a successful conclusion in Korea before we burden ourselves with the furnishing of troops to Europe. Until the North Atlantic community is unified, I deny that there is anything America can do to help in creating an effective defense establishment for Western Europe. Everyone's guess is as good as another's when it comes to the guess about the potential communist aggressor. The communist aggressor knows that the free nations of the world are not unified today. There's probably a greater will to resist outside the Atlantic Pact than there is within it. If the aggressor knew without question that the resources of all other nations, not merely some nations, were joined in a common concert of determination to fight to the finish, then unless the aggressor wishes to commit suicide and destroy civilization, he would say to himself, "There is no point in fighting against so large a group of nations who are determined to resist me to their utmost." Therefore, I again state that until the European nations show a desire to join with us for their and our own protection, we are whistling in the dark by sending troops and materials overseas.
Thank you, Congressman Belday of Illinois. And be with me again next week, same station, same time. If you want a copy of this script in printed form, write to Washington 4, D.C., to Upton Close.